Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and welcome. It is Tuesday, and November 21st, and we're just a couple days away from the big Thanksgiving holiday. I heard that 46 million turkeys will be made. That's a lot of turkeys. Pringles has decided that they're going to come up with a stackable potato chip dinner. Okay, hear me out. The chips, there are 8 flavors. One flavor is turkey, one flavor is mashed potato, one flavor is stuffing, cranberry sauce, cream corn, green bean casserole, mac and cheese, and pumpkin pie, all in the shape of potato chips. So I think there's probably some, I don't know, some people out there that go, that sounds like a pretty good idea. And especially when I think of single guys who are like in a hurry, guys that are always on the fly, you know, who eat a lot of their meals standing over the sink. I always wanted to open up a restaurant for that. All sinks. I'd be the maitre d'. Sink for one? Yeah. You can just stand and eat over the sink. I think that's a good idea. Ted's giving me the big thumbs up. All right. We have a really great show today. We've got Rob Bluey, my Washington, D.C. correspondent. He's going to be on the studio line in just a minute. And we're also going to have Kim Cotola with us this morning. And then Peter Kapsner is going to be with us. Always a pleasure. And then Todd Mulliken. We're going to talk about a little bit of anxiety that people have about Thanksgiving, and we're going to talk about what it's going to be like if you are one of those folk that get a little nervous about going to the dinner and being around the family or the friends or the relatives, and how we have to keep our own anxiety in check, because it certainly can be stressful for many. So we're going to talk to Todd about that as well. All right, that's the start of our day. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Go nowhere, because Rob Bluey's already on our studio line, and we're going to find out everything that's going on in Washington, D.C. Be right back. That walk-off music belongs to Rob Bluey, my Washington, D.C. correspondent, editor of the Daily Signal. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
Thank you so much. So I think the president is pardoning the turkey today, and this after the White House ceremony, the turkey will live out their natural lives at the Gobbler's Rest exhibit at Virginia Tech. How many turkeys actually die of a natural death?
Good question. I do know that the White House is taking votes, though, on which turkey the president should pardon. I believe the two turkeys that are under consideration are Drumstick and Wishbone. I had the kids cast their vote last night, Bill. We had some fun with it.
Oh, that's hilarious. So let's get the update on a couple of things going on that are really hot topics in your hometown. The update on Al Franken. Oh, my goodness. Things are getting worse for him, aren't they?
That's right. A new accuser stepped forward yesterday, this one describing an incident that took place when he was a U.S. Senator. Al Franken was elected to the U.S. Senate in 2008. This incident took place in 2010 at the Minnesota State Fair, and it comes on the heels of last week's allegations, which included a photograph of Al Franken, then a comedian, groping a newscaster who was asleep at the time. And it was just a very disturbing and really shocking image to see. And he rightly apologized immediately, submitted himself to an ethics investigation with the Senate. But I think that the difference is with this latest allegation is that this shows that there may be a pattern here of behavior. Maybe it wasn't just a one-time incident during that USO tour. Maybe there will be others who come forward, and we've certainly seen that with many of the other famous people who've come under the microscope, including Charlie Rose today, with eight women coming out against him. So, yeah, Bill, this is not looking good for Senator Franken.
You know, Rob, when I think of optics, of course, that's so important in politics. And I did see that picture of Senator Franken at the state fair. And I found it very interesting that the woman that he was photographed with, obviously a nice, attractive woman, but I was looking at his proximity. He was literally quite pressed against her with his head physically touching her head, which seems like, a fairly cozy little intimate pose. And if optics are important and you're having your picture taken with hundreds and hundreds of people at the state fair, you would think in your brain you would have some appropriate distance that you would hold, showing here's an appropriate picture of me with a state fair guest.
That's right. And I felt the same way when I saw the image. I said, this looks like somebody who, like a husband and wife.
Very much.
Like some random politician who you meet at the state fair usually doesn't get that kind of cozy with you. So, and by the way, politicians are accustomed to taking photos every day. I mean, this is one of the aspects of their job is the grip and grin photo, right? So why he decided to get so close, and of course, I think the thing that was most, in a way disturbing, is that she actually commented on his actions back in 2010 when this happened, but either nobody paid attention or noticed it, but she did this on Facebook because her sister, I believe, was the one who, like you, said, geez, that's an awful intimate photo of you with the senator, and she described what happened. So, we'll see where this goes. I think that certainly Senator Franken hopes that it fades quickly. There were some people in Minnesota that said he should resign, and I think that the pressure is only going to increase from here. He does have he is not in Washington, so he does not have to face the D.C. press corps and the corridors of Congress, so that may work in his favor. But still, if we hear more allegations, I just don't know what the future holds.
Well, I guess I'd be okay with a shoulder-to-shoulder picture because, that's what you do all day long is you take a picture, and there's a good chance you're standing shoulder-to-shoulder. But when the heads are actually touching, it makes me question, did she lean her head into his or did he lean his head into hers? And if that was the case, then it feels a little bit too intimate.
That's right, and then of course the big question is where did his hands go? Because that's not something that you see in the photo. And apparently her husband was the one who was taking the picture as well. So again, it's just it sounds like a very strange situation and one that, if you're a public figure, you do your best to avoid, and you don't want to certainly, as you said, the optics are critical here. And the fact that we now have two photographs, the one where Franken is clearly touching a woman inappropriately while she was sleeping, and then now this one where it appears that they're very close together, unlike some of the other situations where we've talked about Harvey Weinstein, had conversations about the other celebrities and media personalities. There hasn't really been photographic evidence. In Al Franken's case, there is. And I think that's all the more damaging.
Yeah, there's a picture that just came out with Al Franken with Arianna Huffington. And I know it was probably a staged photo to be shocking, but it was also a picture of him grabbing her. So anyway.
That's right.
Yeah, as we try to digest our Pop-Tarts, we should probably move on to a different subject.
Right.
All right, let's talk about this episode with the UCLA basketball players. And it seems like the president is now being criticized fairly robustly by the player's father.
Oh, my goodness. This is one of those situations where no good deed goes unpunished, I guess. I mean, here President Trump is visiting China. He's on his tour through Asia, and these three UCL basketball players are caught shoplifting, I believe from Louis Vuitton
A $2,000 pair of sunglasses. They each tried to take a $2,000 pair of sunglasses. And by the
right.
way, and by the way, they're wearing $700 tennis shoes.
Yeah, I know. So You know, here we have a situation where they're already doing something that is illegal, whether it's in China or the United States. I mean, shoplifting is bad. Let's establish that first. And you have a situation where the president of the United States intervenes to get them out of jail in China, bring them back home. Of course, they've been suspended by UCLA because they're not playing basketball because of the actions they took. And the players themselves were thankful, and it seemed complimentary toward the president. But LaVar Ball, who's the father of one of the players, who has a history of trying to create controversy and stir up trouble, attacked the president on television and said that he didn't really think that Trump deserved the credit that he was getting, and this prompted Trump to fire back and say, I should have just left the players in jail, and it's, you know, escalated this war of words. Well, some people are saying that LaVar Ball did this intentionally to drum up sales for the athletic brand that, that he's overseeing. And you really hope that that's not somebody's motive in all of this. And, you know, here we are just days from Thanksgiving. I mean, can we not just be thankful for the – I mean, you don't have to like President Trump, but he did intervene to get them out of trouble. So it seems, again, that he can't do anything without stirring up some controversy in some quarters.
I would want to show these basketball players from UCLA some of the news clips from Otto Warmbier's attempt at stealing something in a communist country. You know, it's like these are dangerous places to be incarcerated.
That's right. And of course, in Otto's case, you know, it ended tragically in his death. So this is a situation where, yes, young people who may not be familiar with the customs and the ways that other countries operate need to be much more careful.
Mm-hmm.
And even in a situation where you have the UCLA basketball team, which you would think that there would be all sorts of chaperones and people who are keeping a close eye on these players. It's not like it was just another, school trip or something
right.
to a foreign country. These are high profile individuals. I mean, they play on national television, and it even seem to run afoul of the law as well.
Yeah, Rob. Let me take a break. When I come back, I want to ask you about the border agent that was killed in Texas, and also that President Trump has added five pretty strong names to possible Supreme Court nominees. Speaking to Rob Bluey, editor of the Daily Signal, we'll take a short break and be right back. Minutes after the hour, I'm talking to Rob Bluey, editor of the Daily Signal, my Washington, D.C. correspondent. Rob, let's talk about what happened in Texas. The border agent was killed by illegal aliens. It sounds unbelievably gruesome, like they were ambushed. Really a sad, sad story.
Yeah, Bill, this is a tragic situation. It's the first time in a number of years, in fact, since Brian Terry was killed back at Operation Fast and Furious several years ago during the Obama era, that we've lost the life of a Border Patrol agent. Of course, the Border Patrol agents put their lives on at risk every day. I mean, that's tough terrain that they need to be patrolling there on the U.S.-Mexico border, and they never know what they're going to encounter. And in this case, it seems that the circumstances are changing rapidly here. The union and some of the people close to the Border Patrol agents do say that they were ambushed, hit in the head with rocks by individuals who they have not yet apprehended. At the same time, the local sheriff is saying that they may have fallen and hit their heads in the fall, and one was injured and one was killed that way. So we're still waiting on, I think, the official confirmation of what happened. But regardless, it is a dangerous job. My colleague Kelsey Harkness was on the border this year, did some really great short documentary videos on the Border Patrol agents for the Daily Signal. And whether or not, they're patrolling by horseback or in car, as I said earlier, it is really a tough situation there. And in a moonless night where it's pitch black, you can't hardly see anything.
Yeah, that's really, really scary stuff. President Trump is adding some pretty good, strong names to Supreme Court nominees. Let's cover some of that.
That's right. This is one of the areas where it seems we often talk about Congress's inaction, right, Bill?
Right.
This is one area where it seems that the White House and the U.S. Senate, which needs to confirm the president's nominees, appear to be in sync. President Trump has had a number of federal judges, both at the lower district court level and then the higher appellate court level, and of course, Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch confirmed already in his first year. He's currently on pace to exceed all modern presidents. One more confirmation will put him past Ronald Reagan, and I think that they're likely to get that between Thanksgiving and Christmas when they come back. And so President Trump's adding these new five names to his list of potential Supreme Court nominees only adds more excitement for conservatives who have been eager to get a win. And it's the president who said that he expects that he could have a couple more Supreme Court nominees this first term, because they are getting older, those justices, and mm-hmm. There are some who are rumored to be interested in retirement.
So, you know, he really has done quite a wonderful job of filling some of these appointments. And I have to say that I think so far with Neil Gorsuch and then others that could come down, this could be transformational for the Supreme Court for conservative causes.
That's right, because you have to remember these are lifetime appointments. So unless the judge retires on their own volition or dies in office, they will be there for life. And as we've often seen on the Supreme Court, they do. There have been a couple of retirements, Sandra Day O'Connor, David Souter, but somebody like a William Rehnquist, of course, died on the bench. So, yes, this is a generational change that we expect to see, and it's one that the Democrats and liberals are nervous about, which is why they've slowed down the confirmation process in the Senate so dramatically, requiring extended debate on literally every single nominee. We I think, have had in previous Senates something like four type of, you know, the filibuster type of action, and we've had 47 under President Trump. So, I mean, Democrats are doing all that they can to try to delay these nominees from getting confirmed.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rob, with Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday, is there anyone in your life that you've, like, been really grateful for who kind of profoundly influenced you? But, and maybe even at the time, you weren't even aware of it. You know, sometimes you look back and you go, oh, boy, that track coach was really profound in my life. Is there anyone that you can think of that you're just really, really grateful for?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously family, you know, family, I think of family first.
Sure.
But on the professional side, in terms of you know, where I am today, I remember when I was getting my start in journalism, working at the Clinton Courier in upstate New York, Clinton, New York, Chuck Kirshner, who was my first editor, who's since passed away, you know, just had a profound influence, I think, on the direction that I chose to go. And he was a longtime editor in New York at Reuters and decided to decamp to a small town in upstate New York and had a profound influence on my life. So definitely thankful for him and really thankful for you know, all of the people who've helped shape my life, including my parents, wife, and kids. So
thanks for
asking the question, Bill.
Well, you know, I'm curious. Sometimes I wonder if people if they're realizing life as they're living it, or if they do better looking at it in the rearview mirror. Because this gentleman that was sort of mentoring you, were you aware of how much good he was doing you at the time, or do you only see its incredible value sometimes when you look back?
Oh, I agree. You definitely don't see the value at the time, because sometimes you're frustrated and you're like, why is he challenging me and
yeah, right.
making me do these assignments that you know, I didn't necessarily see value in at the moment, but you look back at it and it really did shape your life. And hopefully, I mean, as we have young journalists and others who work at the Daily Signal, I mean, I hope that I can have that same kind of an influence on their life as well. So yeah, no, definitely these mentors in your life and all of your listeners' lives, I think, teach us a very important lesson, and this is a great time to say thanks.
Yeah, no kidding. So, Rob, my last burning question, did the Bluey family vote for Wishbone or Drumstick? To be pardoned.
I think we had so the two boys, I think, split. one was a drumstick and one was a wishbone. But we'll find out later today because, you know, the president needs to pardon that turkey and then he's heading down to Florida in a much warmer weather.
Right. So just know that will be the first question I will ask when I talk to you next. Have a great Thanksgiving, Rob.
Thanks, Bill.
Yep, talk to you later. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and then listen to Ken Davis at Lighten Up.
If you're picking up drive-through coffee this morning on your way to work, tell them Bill says hi and make mine a double. The Early Morning Light Show on Faith Radio.
Praise your name from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. I praise your name and lift our voices and proclaim. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name.
That voice belongs to Jameson Stadema. And Jameson, lead singer of Go Fish, and he also sang my theme song. Early Morning Late Show. So I'm forever grateful for him. So I'm just trying to have a grateful spirit this morning as well. We'll take a little break for news. When we come back, Kim Cattola is with us. Kim will be with us at 20 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in a minute.
Radio companionship that's good for the soul.
Been a longtime lover and supporter of it. It just seems that no matter what I'm going through at the time I'm going through it, I can turn it on, and God has something for me at that exact time. It's always whatever I need at the moment. So I just really appreciate it so much. Just give it a try. Give it a try. With the alternatives out there, give it a try. You might really appreciate it.
Highlighting real hope every day. Faith Radio.
Five minutes until the top of the hour. How you view God determines how you relate to Him. Makes sense, doesn't it? Sadly, there's so many people that think God is angry at them. Beth Slivkov, who's an author and a speaker, has got something to say about that.
It so often goes back to our image of God, and in such a broken world, we have such broken images of God, where I think many of us, God is kind of like a CEO of a highly productive, highly efficient company, and we better toe the line and fit in. And really, you know, the reality is that God created us to have to shut down for a third of our life, you know, 8 hours every night. And that's about the most inefficient model I can imagine.
That was Beth Slivkov. If you want to hear that interview in its entirety, head to myfaithradio.com and type in Beth Slivkov, S-L-E-C-O-V-E. And I really hope I pronounced that name right. Chances are good I didn't, because that's kind of what I do sometimes. But you can also type in God Disappointed, and you'll get to that interview that Susie Larson had with her. And we'll be taking a very short break, and then Kim Cattola is going to be with us as we are taking inventory of all the things we're grateful for. I'm certainly grateful for Kim, who's such a faithful contributor to the show, and I just love her show, Cradle My Heart Radio, which was on Sunday night, and also to some of the new listeners that are coming on board and our faithful listeners that support us so generously. There's a new listener in the Madison area named Keith who said, I just found the station, and boy, do I love it. I'm learning all kinds of stuff. Little stuff like that just makes a huge difference in encouraging us here at the station. If you want to send a note, we would always love to hear from you. You can do that anytime. Bill at myfaithradio.com. I'm certainly grateful for all the faithful listeners. My friend Bob just sent me an email this morning, a text saying, grateful for you. And, you know, that goes a long way. I appreciate it very much. We'll take a short break and be back with Kim in just a minute.
Capitalism, defined within the framework of biblical principles, is ingenious. This is Jim Garlow. The capitalism I'm advocating is one that's hemmed in and with the parameters of Judeo-Christian values, honesty, forthrightness, integrity, and openness. Utilitarianism, the idea that whatever seems best for the most form of capitalism, is inherently anti-biblical. But the desire to work hard, be as creative as one can, gaining from one's labors, it's good, it's right, it's biblical, it's God-honoring. But intrinsic to an economic construct like capitalism is an acceptable moral framework to to govern personal actions and decisions. Without a biblically moral base to guide and restrain human nature, any economic system will eventually rot. Capitalism isn't in itself selfish, but the heart behind it can be. There's more on this at jimgarlow.com.
Minutes until the top of the hour, and then it's going to be the top of the hour. And we're already well into our day. I hope you're getting it started on a good note. I hope your heart is full of gratitude, because this is gratitude week, even though every day should be gratitude day. And very grateful to have Kim Cotola with us on our Skype line. Kim is, of course, the host of Cradle My Heart Radio, which airs Sunday night on the Faith Radio station. Kim, good morning.
Good morning. I'm grateful to be here, Bill.
Oh,
I really mean that. I am.
Shucks.
It's, you know, I am. I feel many times, as I'm sure others do, whatever cause for Christ you've taken up, like a voice of one crying in the wilderness. There is a lot of apathy around the cause of life. There's a lot of suffering around the cause of life. And wow, connecting the message to those who need to hear it, that's the task, right? And Faith Radio provides a great outlet for that. So I really am grateful, Bill, because mm-hmm. you get it. I like that about
how,
you.
How well are we loving the lost? Mm. What kind of urgency do we have? You know, this is a holiday coming up now where there's going to be plenty of opportunities for conversation. Either you step into the difficult ones or you retreat from the difficult ones.
Wow. That is the question.
Yeah.
You know, and we can, and that's a place to start. It's not a cause for despair if the answer is not very well. Okay, start now. You know, we could start right now, right? I mean, this is the thing. God's mercies are new every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of how apathetic or how sinful or how broken the past has been, we can start right now.
Right. I want to start with a very good news story about the story of an adopted baby named James.
Yeah, and you know, so November is National Adoption Month, and I don't know if it's, you know, been raised in the awareness of everybody listening, but adoption is a beautiful plan for building families. It's God's plan for building His family. There's no other way to become a child of God than to be adopted through becoming an heir of Christ by, you know, accepting His sacrifice on our behalf. And so adoption is such a beautiful picture that all Christians ought to be endorsing and advancing. And National Right to Life News published a story about James, who was adopted as a result of, you know, being escaping the forced abortion policy in China. And he was born back in 2013. And his father wrote about his adoption and the fact that this young woman's father and her former boyfriend joined together to force her to abort her baby in China. She was pregnant by her Chinese boyfriend. They were to be married, but he left. And when a woman is in that position, Bill, if you're going to escape the one child, now the two child policy, there's money involved and you have to get involved with the local bureaucrats. And it can happen, but it doesn't often happen for the average and certainly not for the poor woman. And that was the circumstance she found her in, found herself in. So she was ministered to by foreign students at university. And there are pregnancy centers in China, and they rescued her child's life. And because she was a student and unmarried, she chose adoption for her child. And so now this family is raising James with a little sister who also was adopted from China as a rescue. She was in an orphanage in China before the family brought her here to the U.S. But it's a beautiful picture of, you know, when you say, are we loving the lost? Are we loving the needy? Mm. Are we loving those who are here who don't even have the very basic thing that you and I enjoy, a family?
Good point.
It's a really, yeah, very inspiring story.
Yeah. Kim, I want to talk a little bit also about the way that if they don't like the science, they call it junk science, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's getting increasingly more difficult to reconcile with, because science is science. So let's call it what it is. And there's a lot of surgical abortions that are happening, and then medical abortions. And so I know the pro-lifers are pushing back against the rise of all abortion, of course, but medicated abortions by promoting abortion reversals. What is an abortion reversal?
Well, I love this piece in the American Conservative. Philip Reed is writing about this week, Bill. And so there are many women who will go for a medical abortion, which involves taking drugs consecutively. So if you take the first drug, then you need to take a second drug at some, future point. I think it's 2 days later. Many women in that time in between will say, wait a minute, I've changed my mind. And they will want to reverse that first dose. And so that has been happening. And there are now at least 300 children who have been born as a result of women changing their minds and reversing that decision. But of course, abortion rights advocates say it's junk science. There's no such thing. And even if you don't take the second dose, the pregnancy can proceed. And it has been known to happen that way. Well, you know what? Not taking that second dose is a reversal. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are other docs who say, look, if we give a high dose of progesterone to reverse that first pill, we see a very good chance that this pregnancy can proceed as normal. And again, those are the cases. And there are a network of doctors who are providing that care through those prescriptions, Bill. And of course, again, abortion rights proponents can't have that. Because no woman ever changes her mind, because abortion is the greatest thing since ever. So, yeah, I really urge you to seek out this piece in the American Conservative because, why, if abortion is so great, why would they care if a few people have decided that they don't want to proceed with it? You know, why should that trouble them on any level? Well, because if somebody doesn't want it, Bill, there must be something wrong with it, and they can't have that. So, yeah, it's very coercive on a psychological level. And you're right. What they always deploy is junk science. They don't really present any evidence. They simply say that those who have the evidence that abortions can be reversed are not scientific.
Yeah, Kim, speaking of science, when I come back after break, I want to have a discussion with you about something science is apparently proving, which is the most ridiculous thing maybe I've heard all year. Kim Cotola is with me. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. I'll be right back. Minutes until the top of the hour. Kim Cotola is with me. Right before I went to break, I left a gigantic cliffhanger out there, which I'm not very good at doing. I try that every once in a while. But science has said something that's pretty provocative. They say that science is proving that kids are bad for Earth. Morality suggests we stop having them. Hello.
Science. That's an actual headline.
That's an actual headline that uses the word science in it.
Science proves kids are bad for Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because they're teeny, tiny little carbon footprints, evil. It's just so silly. And this is a piece written for NBC News. They have a sub website called Think. And Travis Reeder is a bioethicist and got a kind of a highfalutin title. He's a PhD, Assistant Director of Education Initiatives, the Director of the Master of Bioethics Degree Program and Research Scholar at the Berman Institute of Bioethics. Okay, so his deal, Bill, is that climate change is the catastrophe of our lifetime, and it's caused by people. And so if we have fewer people, we'll have less climate change. Essentially, that's the argument.
Okay.
That's the logic that they're trying to deploy. If you look back, when population control was supposed to be the answer, it was food and famine in the 1960s when Paul Ehrlich said that, population control was the answer. It was in Malthus. It was about, when Malthusian economics were first introduced early in the 20th century, it was about something else. But the answer is always population control. And it's always been opposition to a biblical worldview where God says, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Was God wrong about that? You know, we have to ask ourselves what we really believe. But if you think climate change is outside of God's control, if you think people have wrecked creation irretrievably and that God is off his throne and not aware of that and has no answer for us, then yeah, it's up to us to save the planet, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing we can do to do that is just not have babies.
Yeah. You know, Kim, all the devil does is tell lies. So if I hear something, I'm pretty certain I can trace it back to a solid biblical truth. Because
yeah.
Only the opposite will be true.
Well, and I think we have to really embrace the reality here that science has become religion for people.
Very much so.
Right. And so scientism is what I think that's referred to as. One of the quotes from this thing in the NBC News, Think, this is not our world any longer. Our moral sense is evolving to reflect that difference. Moral decisions are no longer about math. Being part of the solution matters. Okay, and so they acknowledge that even most climate change experts say, when you recycle, Bill, it doesn't really matter to the planet because it's such a tiny act.
Mm-hmm.
That the problem is you have to attack industries, you have to attack nations, you have to attack systemic pollution, right? And so if the earth doesn't care what you and I do as individuals, it still matters. We still have to do that because we have a moral duty to do what we can as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what's really interesting to me is that there's a great book out there, Bill, called The Bible Among the Myths. And it's written by John Oswalt, and it's pretty heady. It takes some time to get through it. But he talks in this book about how only Yahweh, among the ancient Near East religions, when the Bible was written in the beginning, the original books of the Old Testament, only Yahweh cared about the individual. Only Yahweh broke through history to deal with people as individuals.
Wow.
The rest of the gods were all about collectivism.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start hearing about collective action needed, we collectively need to stop having babies and then congratulate ourselves for our virtue. Because the planet's going to live without people on it? Wait, what? There's no logic.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, Bill, population control. I think I've heard a number of different ways that this is stated. But one says that you could take every person now alive on planet Earth and give us all a 1,000 square foot home and we'd all fit in the state of Texas.
Wow. I didn't see that one coming.
The earth is nowhere near being overpopulated.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is turn human innovation and ingenuity to the problems of climate change. Turn human excellence and human wisdom and working together to solve our problems. You know, find ways to make different places on the earth habitable. Find ways to use resources that don't deplete the earth. The answer is not have fewer children or euthanasia or all the other things that flow out of this worldview that people are bad and the earth is somehow inherently better without us. It's definitely a worldview problem. And I think this bioethicist writing for NBC News Think is way off the mark.
I agree. Kim, pro-life advocates are all usually very excited about getting a very conservative person on the Supreme Court, and it looks like the president is nominating, putting it out there, a list of awfully interesting and solid conservative men and women who are committed to interpreting that Constitution according to its original meaning.
Well, yeah, and this just happened on Friday. President Trump did announce a list of five individuals who he will put forward as potential candidates if there's a future Supreme
mm-hmm.
Court vacancy. There isn't one right now.
I know.
But Anthony Kennedy has said he may retire in the near future. So, yeah, there are several. One is Amy Barrett. And you may have remembered that there were some hearings that she was involved in not long ago. And Senator Feinstein and others asked her very inappropriate questions about her Catholic faith. Can you overcome your dogma? Well,
right.
What was the question? Can you overcome yours?
Right.
So Amy Barrett is out there. She's about 45 years old, former University of Notre Dame law professor. recently confirmed to the Seventh Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
They also note on the list Britt Grant, Supreme Court of Georgia Justice, who's about 40 years old and was appointed by Governor Deal in 2016, was also the state Solicitor General and in other capacities in the state of Georgia. You've got Brett Kavanaugh on the list, who's a judge in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. He's 52 years old, former clerk for Justice Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a judge in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, Kevin Newsom, who's about 45 years old. And they call him a former all-star appellate lawyer, confirmed to the 11th Circuit in August. He has argued a number of cases before the Supreme Court. And then rounding out the list is the youngest candidate, Patrick Weirich, who's a Supreme Court justice in Oklahoma. And he's just 36 years old, but that isn't without precedent. There have been justices that have been that young or that old, however you see it, appointed. So the Daily Signal has been covering this, and they say they commend the president for taking the care in continuing to identify those individuals for the federal bench. And, Bill, you know, we need to, as Christians, we need to say our prayers that God's will be done in those seats of power, and that he will lead us as a nation, that his elected leaders will turn their ear to his guidance.
Mm, that's such good words. Kim, thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your fam.
Thank you, Bill. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving Day.
I plan on it. Have a great rest of the week.
You too.
Yep. Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio. It is 3 minutes until the top of the hour. I'll be right back. A big thank you. Lots of gratitude to Kim Cotola. And also to Rob Bluey, two of my all-time favorite guests that just show up and are so good every week. We'll take a short break. Hour two coming up, Todd Mulliken, talk about family dynamics around the Thanksgiving table. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.